This is the All Things Bama Podcast, powered by the Bama Central Broadcast Network.
Welcome in to the All Things Bama Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Mason Woods. I'm joined here by my good friend, Joe Gaither. Before we get into things, I want to remind you all to go follow both Joe and myself on Twitter at JoeGaither6, at MAWoods_, and go ahead, if you haven't already, to subscribe to the podcast, rate us 5 stars on whatever platform you get your podcasts on, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon, whichever one it is. We have a fun show today. We're going to get into a handful of topics, we're going to briefly discuss Alabama's massive Sweet 16 win over BYU. We just got done spending almost an hour getting into it on Joe's show, so go there if you want the full rundown of it. We are also going to deep dive on the upcoming Elite Eight matchup with the vaunted Duke Blue Devils. This has felt like the matchup I've dreaded the entire tournament. I have seen it on the, I saw it potentially coming the moment the Field of 64 was announced, and here it finally is. So we will get into that a little bit to talk about Alabama's potential keys to victory. I also want to touch a little bit on women's hoops, just mention the game from this week, also get into softball. They had a midweek game as well, and then I want to shut the show down with just a little bit of recruiting talk. Oh, but before we do any of that, Joe, how are we doing today?
I mean, how can you be doing bad after an Alabama basketball performance like that in the Sweet 16? Whew, I'm doing great, yeah, Mason. Thanks for having me.
That was an amazing performance from Alabama. Again, go listen to Joe's show if you want to hear us just in our absolute, happiest talking about the BYU-Alabama game from last night. Before we get into anything today, though, right as we got ready to start recording, a bunch of new contracts have dropped for Alabama athletics, so I'm looking here. This is our friend Mike Rodak, who's reporting on everything. The first one I'm seeing
Mike Rodak, 247.
Yes, the first one I'm seeing is Preston Murphy, a proposed extension through April 2027 at $675,000 a year.
Underpaid.
Next one is Ryan Grubb is also getting a 2-year extension through 2027. He's going to be receiving $1 million annually. And apparently that is due to, some leftover money from Seattle, maybe, because that is, Greg Byrne noted that his existing contracts with the Seahawks helped Alabama. So I think that is why the Tide maybe is not having to put up premium offensive coordinator money for a premium offensive coordinator. The next one here, Ryan Grubb is set to receive a 2-year extension. Oh, wait, that's the one I just said. I guess that's it. I thought I saw a third one. Maybe it was just the two. So I guess it was just the two. No, it's Courtney Morgan. That was the third one I saw. Courtney Morgan, another 2-year extension through 2027. We'll pay him $875,000 a year. Underpaid as well. I think Courtney Morgan has, in a very quick time, solidified himself as a premier general manager in college football. The dude is amazing at his job. And, when we get into the recruiting talk at the end of the show a little bit, we will continue to praise him and how he's done with this since he's taken over in this position. But we'll start with the basketball talk, get it out of the way. We will, obviously Alabama absolutely dominates BYU last night in Newark. BYU betters in shambles. I don't know why anybody was so high on the Cougars to begin with. I still don't understand the seeming national sentiment that BYU is amazing and Alabama sucks. I saw that from so many people. It didn't make a lot of sense. Alabama makes 25 threes in the game. That's the NCAA record. Mark Sears absolutely goes nuclear in the game. 10 for 16 from three, finishes with, 34 points. BYU just did not have an answer for anything Alabama did. They tried to switch it up defensively, tried to get into some zone looks, tried to back off the three-point line a little bit, forced them to, everything they tried, it didn't work. Alabama just kept jacking up threes and kept making threes.
Yeah, going under the screens, because I think they were worried about getting beat up at the rim, but every time you go under the screen, Alabama was like, fine, we'll just take this three-point shot, yeah. And in your eye, over and over and over.
What is it, the bottom, yeah. Bottom. I heard it say, I'm sure you heard it so many times if you were listening to the radio broadcast.
25 of 51.
Mark Sears, now the second all-time leading scorer in program history. Did have a couple issues. I need to see some more toughness from Cliff Amore down low on the boards, especially. Only 6 rebounds when he had that much of a size and strength advantage over BYU is inexcusable. But, that's nitpicking. It really felt like everything just went Alabama's way in that game. Except for the next round matchup.
Ooh.
because while either Arizona or Duke was going to be a tough game, it was pretty obvious who you wanted in this, who you wanted to play, and that was Arizona. You did not get that wish. Alabama is now matched up with Duke, and I mean, to say I'm worried is an understatement. This is, you know, like I said at the beginning of the show, this is the matchup I did not want.
Yeah, because they're immensely talented. They're and when you look at Alabama's landscape this year, Alabama's one of the most talented teams in the country. It's Alabama, it's Florida, it's Duke, it's Houston. Like there's a certain group of teams that have separated themselves just from a pure talent standpoint. Now, you've also got to play in your system and play well. But like when you just, if they were all just computer players and it was all just based on talent, well, Duke can match you one for one. You know, might be a little better talent wise than Alabama. Cooper Flag, that dude's insane. He's a bigger, more athletic version of Luka.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe I'm just saying that because of the Caucasian skin.
I mean, he's certainly way more athletic. He's like if Luka was a slasher and could really get to the rim a lot more effectively than he does. Because
he Larry Bird? Is he Larry Bird but more aggressive at the rim?
Yeah, I mean, he's. Is it Kevin Durant?
Yeah,
you know,
Durant is he?
Yeah, he's in that
a little smaller Dirk Nowitzki. Yeah, you know what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, you know, he's a scrappy guy. He's first in, last out.
He's Chandler Parsons.
Yeah, he's
he's souped up Chandler Parsons.
Austin Reeves on steroids.
No,
some would say.
No. A little. I could see Austin Reeves too. Yeah. No. What other forwards? What other like wing players? Threes that I can come up with. Is it Hedo Turkoglu?
Oh, that's a good one. Really digging deep in the bag.
But
there.
He just goes to the rack better than you do. I think I'm about out. I think I'm about out of this game.
That's one of the funniest things to me is like when you read, scouting about players and you read like comparisons or it usually happens a lot more on like ESPN when the people who don't really know what they're talking about that much get to talking about things, and they will just make the most like blatantly race comparison between two players that they can make. You know, white point guard, like, well, this guy, you know, he looks like Jason Kidd out there. It's like Steve Nash, and it's just like the guy plays nothing like those two players, but they just instantly want to compare he looks like him, so he's got to be the same kind of player. No, Cooper Flag is Kevin Durant. Cooper Flag plays like Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant's one of the greatest players in the history of the NBA. Cooper Flag has a, you know, similar body type, very long, very, very, you know, lanky. I think, you know, Flag's got a little stronger, maybe a little bit bulkier. But in that same vein, I mean, he can shoot, he can slash, he can drive to the basket, he can do everything. He's a good defender. He is very obviously the leader of this Duke team, but all that to say, they're still extremely deep as well. Cooper Flagg still, you know, he's averaging 19 points, 7.5 rebounds, 4.3 assists a game, shooting almost 50% from the field, almost 40% from three. So, like, Cooper Flagg's going to get his in this game, most likely. I think you have to worry about guys like Konkanepel, 14. He's averaging, you know, 14 a game.
How good is he really?
I mean, his stats say he's pretty dang good, almost 50% from the field, 40% from three.
Yeah, 50, he's a I think he might be a player that at the end of the game, after Alabama's mostly done okay with Cooper Flagg, they think, that gosh darn Knupple.
I'm concerned as well. I think, you know, you put him on just about any other roster, and he is the star guy. He's just been, unfortunately, sat in the shadow of Cooper Flagg this year because Cooper Flagg is so good. But I do think Con Knupple is a very good player. And they also have Tyrese Proctor, Sion James, who are both over 40% three-point shooters. It's going to be extremely hard for Alabama to win this game. Like, just plain and simple. Duke does so much so well. They really do everything well. It was very hard. I really wasn't able to find an identifiable weakness in their game in the bit of research I tried to do this morning.
What kind of research did you this may not have stood out to you, but what's their bench? How are we playing 7-8-9? Are we playing 6-7? Like, what's the rotation look like? As you look this up, I'll set up why. Alabama, number one in tempo, and we know Alabama has 8-9-10 rotation, depends on the night, right? 8-9-10. Alabama, number one in tempo. Duke, apparently 265, according to a text from my friend. 265 in tempo. You get into second game and third day. Is there any chance Bama gets into their legs? What's their rotation
look
like?
Looks like we're running about 10 deep.
Ah, dang it.
Yeah, we're running about 10 deep on Duke. We got 10 players averaging 10 minutes or more a game.
Ah, dang it.
Bad theory. Your starters are, you know, Cooper Flagg and Konkanipo are both Tyrese Proctor as well, all three getting around 30 minutes a game. So those three are going to be on the court for the majority of the game.
Bad theory, Joe.
But unfortunately, yeah, Duke is just as deep. Yeah, and it's just hard to find a weakness. Now, you did mention the tempo. Yeah, they are 264 in tempo. Is that what? Yeah, 264 in tempo, averaging like 10 less possessions a game than Alabama. So, you know, maybe there's a chance for Bama to get out and run a bit if you can get some transition buckets and get out to a lead and maybe just keep extending that lead. But, man, it is going to be very, very difficult for the Crimson Tide in this one. I don't – like I said, I couldn't really even identify an obvious weakness with this Duke team. They're an almost 80% free throw shooting team, 50% from the field pretty much. They all shoot right around – they're 37% from three. They just attack you from everywhere. They've dominated this tournament. You know, Arizona almost took them to the wire last night, but even then, I didn't watch the highlights. The score did not really indicate that game. Like, Duke controlled that game the entire time from start to finish, pretty much.
This is from the same buddy. Caleb Love scored something like 15 in a row in the second half at the same time. Duke had not missed a shot in the second half. He kept them in the game. He said, I felt like it was Colin Sexton 1-5 out there for a minute.
Yes, that's kind of what it felt like. I think Caleb Love finished the game with like 36 or something. It was just, it was never out of question for Duke. No matter what Arizona did, Duke just came back down on the other end. I was like, all right, whatever, we'll just do our thing, get the ball inside to Cooper Flagg, let him work. They were just dominant. They have been dominant all year. They've been dominant in this tournament. They have, through the first two rounds, what they win by 30-something points or something. I mean, just ridiculously good. I think if you're Alabama, you know, obviously you have to stop Cooper Flagg, but I think almost you kind of just have to accept that he's going to play well. You know, he's going to get his 20 points probably. He's going to get his 25 points in this game. I think you really have to worry about stopping the other guys, your Tyrese Proctors, your Konkanipo, Sion James, like I said, the guys that are the deadly shooters from the outside. If you can limit that and then also hopefully continue this hot shooting streak, that's probably your best chance at success here.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, you got to get open shots. You have to get efficient shots. I think that is the key to winning. If you are able to get efficient shots, then I think that you give yourself a chance. I mean, the talent for Alabama, the talent is there to where if you're getting the efficient shots, I can live with make or miss, and I can live with, okay, whoever wins and whoever loses. That's what I was so not upset, but concerned with last night, with how many times you came down the floor and you didn't get a single pass into the paint. Yeah, you made the 3-point shot, but it got a little excessive. It got a little excessive, and it became like, we're just doing this because
it's. I think they just kept doing it because it was working, though. I mean, you made half your threes, so it was every other time you did it, you made one, you know, and that's, hey, three's more than two. Part of me was concerned a little bit that maybe they were just relying too much on the three, but then also, like, they still, you know, we talked about it on your show, they were still, what, 70% from inside the paint last night against BYU?
Oh, yeah, so they were effective.
You were still very efficient when you did go to the paint. It's just you were also extremely efficient from the three, so you didn't have to get inside. I don't, you know, if that same thing happens, yes, this Alabama team beats anybody. I just don't think that's going to happen necessarily again.
I agree. It's so hard to – I mean, when you think about it, the team has not shot that way most of the year. Most of the year they've been a little – what did I see last night? I think I saw 34% from the three for the team, which put them at like 110 or something in the entire college basketball. BYU, as a buddy was telling me how bad they were, and said, they can't shoot threes. I said, they shoot 37% as a team, which is good for 30th in the country. And number one in the country is 39%. So just 2 percentage points better than BYU. So that's what makes me think that last night's not necessarily sustainable. Now, maybe it is. Shoot. The sight lines. What did do? Here's my question, and here's what got bantered around in one of our Bama Central chats. I don't know if you're in that one or not, but you've got, where's that Duke matchup right there? Gamecast box score. What did they shoot Duke and Arizona from three? 11 and 12 is 23, and 26 and 19 is 36, is 45. So 23 of 45, the teams combined for in the Arizona Duke game. I'm wondering if the gym is just conducive. What was this? 23 of 45 is what percentage? It's 51% combined for Arizona and Duke from the three-point line. So I'm wondering if the sight lines in this building are just perfect, yeah. are just dialed in just right for these fellas. Because, you know, you see in big arenas sometimes the sight lines and the depth perception. Weird. Alabama shot well. Arizona shot well. Duke shot well. BYU didn't. Okay. BYU, sure. You didn't. But what do we say? 19 of 45. What are these Alabama numbers? 19 of 45 plus
25 of 51.
And 6 of 30. So you're 31 of 8. Yeah. 31 of 80 something. 31 of 81 for Alabama BYU. So much lower percentage because of the Cougars. But I'm wondering if this building is just going to be just right for the Crimson Tide to stay hot.
I mean, that would be great. You know, that sure would be awesome. It would be a little disappointing to have that happen and then the Final Four see the polar opposite. But
well, yeah.
At that point, we don't care because you're there. So I'm looking at the spread here. Duke's 6.5-point favorite. They've got the over-under at 174.5. You know, obviously they're expecting it to be a pretty high scoring game, not quite as high scoring as Alabama BYU was, or they expect it to be rather, but oh man, I don't know. I think it'll be closer than 6.5. I mean, I think Bama can keep it closer than that. But I think I just don't know that you're gonna be able to stop Cooper Flagg. I don't know that you're gonna be able to stop him enough, stop, you know, everyone they have enough, because I mean, outside of Flagg, like I said, Konkanipal's still a 6'8", so he, you know, we're a really tall, lengthy player that has some size about him that can give you headaches inside. I'm struggling to see a path to victory for Alabama in this game. And, you know, maybe that's me just having some dire view on it, but I just feel like Duke has been so dominant all year. I mean, their three losses was it Kentucky, Kansas.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
This Clemson, so three weird losses for them, but outside of those three games, they've just dominated everyone. It's hard to see how Alabama wins this. I think, you know, you win it by a similar performance.
Jaron, your child, your mother and father, you're from Chapel Hill. Come on.
Duke said your mom's, or Cooper Flagg said your mother's ugly, Jaron.
Jaron, please. Jaron was so bad last night to me. That was not. That was the one negative to me. You talked about Cliff on my show, but Jaron was terrible, in my opinion. Jaron, one of three, 2 points. Okay, I don't really even care about the offensive production. It was the... I don't know how many offensive rebounds that young man allowed. I don't know. It was at least three times in my brain that I registered, Jaron, you son of a, welcome out. It was at least three times, but I think more than that. Stat Broadcast does not give you offensive rebounds conceded, but it should.
That should be a stat. We got to start tracking it.
I don't think Jaron was very good last night.
Yeah, you know, instead of like blue collar points, can we have white collar plays where it's like you were too soft?
Jaron.
What would instead of getting a hard hat, you get like a tie because you
Laffy Taffy's.
Yeah, you get a thing of bubbles.
We just throw bubble gum at you. Coach just throws a hard hat at one and then takes a piece of bubble gum and throws it at the other. You were great, buddy, and you were terrible.
That would really wake the team up. That's what we need.
It's like and the little bubble gum, like double bubble. Like, you can throw it as hard as you can. You're not gonna hurt somebody.
What do you think of Nate Oates knowing he was going to be playing Duke before the game even started? Did you see that? during one of the, I don't know if it was the like under 10 timeout or whatever it was, but you know, one of the sideline interviews with Nate Oates. So yeah, he's like, well, you know, oh, we got to do these things that we're going to have to play better against Duke.
Oh, I think he was just, you know.
I mean, he just knew that. I think he knew Duke was probably going to beat Arizona. You think they've been preparing? You think he's been preparing them for Duke at all?
No, but I do. Well, I know assistants have been preparing.
Just putting it in the back of any of the players' heads. Hey, it's FYI. It's probably who's going to play. Get ready. Lock in.
Maybe.
I don't think so. Probably not.
Yeah, I think that you had Ryan Pannone and Brian Adams grinding the tape, and you had Preston Murphy calling every recruit in the building. We haven't talked about this on our show. On the Joe Gaither show, we'll talk. We can spin it now. We can waste 5 minutes on this. The transfer portal opening on Monday, while the Sweet 16 is happening, and so one of Alabama's coaches who got a raise, as you outlined at the open of this show, Preston Murphy, pay him more for this reason here. And look, I know they get paid a lot of money, but it's insane what you ask these guys to do. Prepare for a Sweet 16 game. Oh, your staff, one member of your staff. Actually, you're going to decide, take you off the prep, and I need you to just man the phones. Nick Kelly wrote an article that said that he had taken 70-something calls in a day from Billy Four-Star, agent of Billy Four-Star, Billy Four-Star's mother, you know, just like engaging. You know, and of course, I think Alabama will do well in the transfer portal. I think you're going to see another Tuscaloosa native come home this coming offseason. But it's not fair. It's not right. And think about the Alabama roster right now. These young men were in the Sweet 16 last night, are now in the Elite Eight. And, of course, Mark gone, Grant gone. Like, some of these guys, you know, graduation, yeah. Cliff Amore, Chris Youngblood, gone. Great. But, like,
what about the guys who are coming back?
Jaron, Darian Reed, Aiden Sherrill.
Aiden Holloway.
Yeah. I think we would all agree Aiden's going to come back to Alabama. But, like, even still, Darian Reed, he's got an interesting path. Do you put your name in the transfer portal on Monday and say, I'm still going with my team and all the way to Sweet 16? Or do you, like, Darian's going to have an interesting spot because it's like, do I stay with Alabama? Do I go to the NBA? Or do I transfer? Well, your transfer options are
drying up by the second.
Yes,
it's really unfair to do that to the players
and the coach.
To the coaches.
Go ahead,
to everybody.
Go ahead.
No, it's just it's just a very unfair schedule. You know, it's all this money that these coaches get is great and all, but like if they don't have any time to do anything with any of the money, what good is it doing? Because they're constantly consumed by their cell phones talking to every single player they could possibly, you know, every player under the sun, because so many hundreds of them enter the transfer portal every day, every time it opens. It's very weird. It should absolutely not be open until the conclusion of the tournament. Let teams focus on the tournament. Let coaching staffs focus on the tournament. Let these teams focus on the tournament and not have to worry about things like that until the actual off season comes. That should be an off season task. It should not be going on in the midst of you trying to make a national championship run.
It's really, really, I mean, we talked about it with football when the bowl season, it's just not the best thing for the sport. It's really not the best thing for the sport. Why can we not at least, I mean, sure, the ideal is the Tuesday morning after the national championship game. Bam, open it all up. But you're going to have people yin-yin about I don't know what. I can't even see why you wouldn't wait. But
academic calendar stuff, I guess.
Let's compromise and say not the Sweet 16 weekend, maybe after the Elite Eight is done.
Sure.
Right, when you only have four teams remaining, I guess.
I think that'd be okay. Because, you know, decent chance, I guess, if you've made it that far, you can retain your roster, that we can say.
It's just really not, in my opinion, not fair.
No, it's just, yeah, it's ridiculous. It just makes things so much more difficult on these coaches, on these assistant coaches, on the players even, because, you know, like you said, now that the transfer portal is open, these players are seeing, oh, Alabama's contacting some folks. Wonder what that means for me. You know, I wanted to come back next year. Is that guy coming to take my spot? Like, it just opens up a whole can of worms for so many things that does not need to be there. Not at this time, not in the most crucial time of the year when you are going to an Elite Eight game against the best team in the tournament. I know Auburn was the one overall seed, but Duke is the best team in the tournament.
It's gonna be fun Saturday. Saturday, what time are we in? Please tell me we're at a really good time. Saturday, we are at. Oh my gosh! No!
That's tough.
8 o'clock start. 7:50 start. Basically, no.
That's tough.
No.
I don't like that. Don't like that one bit.
We're the more.
Are you? You
we're this, the more marquee game, but
absolutely, I think this is the more marquee game. You've got the number one overall draft pick, and you have a team trying to get back to their second Final Four in a row.
I hate TV networks. I hate you because they're going to say, "Well, this is the more marquee time slot, 7:50." No, I wanted it 5 o'clock on Saturday's perfect. I can go to bed early and I can go to bed after the game and be at church. No, I'm going to be up till 1 a.m.
I couldn't make it through those games last night. The 9 o'clock, the 9 and 9:30 tip. What was it? Is that what it was?
Old man Joe. Old man. So, yeah, Saturday at 7:50, TBS. Gross.
We're getting a new TV this weekend. Not new. New to us. A bigger TV than we have. So, I didn't have anything to do with the previous one that was in the living room. So, I stuck it on a random table beside my computer in there. And now I've just got... was just watching the game, and next thing I knew, it was about 10 minutes into that Duke-Arizona game, and I sacked out. And I woke up, and it was like, oh, my God. In a daze, Duke was up by like 11. I didn't know what had happened. And then I said, hey, it's time for me to go get in the bed. That was I do not love these late tips. But, man, like we said, it's going to be quite the task to ask Alabama to win this game against Duke. I think they can do it, but you're going to need a near-perfect performance. You're going to have to do what you did against BYU, if not a little more. But they can do it. Like I said, we will see. I want to move on a little bit now. I do want to mention Alabama softball this week as well. Had a midweek win over North Alabama. Had to struggle for it a bit. Down by 2 runs heading into the 7th inning, down to your final out. Lauren Johnson hit the RBI single to tie. Bama scored 2 more runs to win, get Patrick Murphy his 1,300th win. I don't really have it fought. You know, haven't been watching the softball team a ton. I know they struggled at the beginning of the year a little bit, picked it up some, and then, I don't know, it seems like the defense is struggling a bit at times. The offense now is struggling, maybe. I don't know. They play tonight at 6 against Georgia. Joe, I think you'll be covering it, you said. So, you know, have some fun at that. Maybe they'll maybe we'll see another scoring barrage from them in this game.
Yeah, Coach Murphy said yesterday in our little availability that it's really just about consistency. They've been in every game,
mm-hmm.
but it's been about closing games out, playing defense towards the end of the stretch, pitching decisions towards the end of the stretch. Big opportunity this weekend because Georgia, they've played 3 SEC series as well. I think Tennessee, South Carolina, and LSU, and they have not won a series yet either. So they're 3-6. Alabama is 2-4 in SEC play. So really huge opportunity for Alabama.
Yeah, kind of need this one.
You've scored well this year, and that was the big issue going into the year. Now it's, well, can we find consistency in the circle and defense? I think that...
it's like they just flip-flopped. Mm-hmm. You know, they went to steer too far in the other direction almost.
Yeah, I think that it's a huge opportunity that they have to take advantage of this weekend. But I still have some sort of maintaining of like, oh, it can click. Because I think the hitting issue, like if you got offense, then you can I don't know. I'm not a softball expert, but I think you can.
If you get the bats going, yes, I'm with you though. That seems to make sense. Whereas like I think getting the bats going, getting runs on the board is the real hurdle. Like you can get the defense to come up behind it. You know. I got to give a shout out also to Alabama Women's Hoops. We talked about it a lot on Joe's show this week. Really tough loss to Maryland in the second round. Double overtime. You lost 111 to 108. But just a gutsy performance from Sarah Ashley Barker. Left it all out on the floor with 45 points. I think she was like 17 of 25. I didn't realize this. I just thought, you know, I went to go look it up. I hadn't even seen anybody mention it, but that past Jasmine Walker's 41-point game in 2021 is the new program record for single-game scoring, so that's cool. I think I saw it was the fourth most in tournament history, in the NCAA women's tournament history. So, again, just a really spectacular performance. If you haven't gotten a chance to go watch her press conference from after the game, give yourself a chance, you know, give yourself the opportunity to do that, because she really, you know, gets emotional a bit, and, you know, it was, I don't know, really will tug on your heartstrings some. It was just hard. I hate to see her lose like that, but she went out, like I said, left everything out on the floor. Really good performance. Impressive to see what Christy Curry has done with this program. I'm excited to see where they go in the future. I know they got a lot to replace for next season, but, you know, I've seen that they've got a pretty good class coming in, so I think maybe they can get back to the tournament, hopefully. Before we get out of here today, quick recruiting update. Alabama adds the fourth member of the 2026 class this week. This is the he immediately becomes the best player in the class, number one overall cornerback in 2026, five-star Jordan Edmonds, 6'2", 175, from Marietta, Georgia. You know, watch his highlights again. That's all you can ever really find with high school players. So take it with a grain of salt. But man, he can cover a very, very wide range. Is extremely physical at the line of scrimmage with receivers. I'm really excited about what this guy can do. Pair him up, you know, getting him here with maybe a Dijon Lee, who will be seeing some playing time, maybe not this year, but next year. I think, you know, this just kind of shows you that Alabama is pivoting towards getting taller and longer corners and safeties, because that's just the way of college football. You're looking at these 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", guys now instead of the scrappier 5'11", 5'10", kind of corners now. But, man, I'm excited about what he can bring. He chose Alabama over Georgia, Tennessee, Florida. Like I said, the fourth commitment of the class. I think Alabama's up to, I want to say, 30th in the 247 composite rankings.
Only 30? Oh, gosh. Yeah.
With four commits, let's say you're doing all right, you know.
Coach, they're falling behind, Mason.
They're going to be okay. They will be okay. They, you know, perfect example of why they will be just fine. You landed in the top final schools for three other players this week, three four-stars. One of them, athlete Ryan Mosley, who he's listed as an athlete, but I'm almost positive he will be a wide receiver at the next level. He's 6'4", has over 1,300 yards and 19 touchdowns through two seasons as a wide receiver, and hasn't really done a whole lot on the other end. You know, a handful of games, it looks like he got in. He did have an interception this past season, but I don't think he's really – I think he's mostly being utilized as a wide receiver. But 6'4", another big body guy like Isaiah Horton this year, like Sadarian Morgan, like some of the guys they've targeted. Another one Alabama's in the final schools for is four-star Brandon Anderson, an interior offensive lineman. 6'4", 320 pounds from Kennesaw, Georgia.
Big boy.
I did not know you could get that big in high school. The guy, throw him on the field tomorrow and he looks like he's been here for two or three years already. Named Alabama among Georgia, Florida State, Tennessee, and Missouri. Nick Abrams II was the last player to name Alabama in his final schools. 6'2", 215 linebacker. 215 pounds, that is. Last year, 77 tackles, 9 tackles for loss, 4 sacks as a junior in high school. So another really good player. I think he's ranked as a top 10 linebacker in next year's class. I would expect Alabama to probably put together a pretty big summer here on the 2026 recruiting trail.
Well, I mean, just like they did last year, I was being totally facetious. That's like they did last year. I mean, you started off behind, and you ended up closing pretty well. Yeah. I don't think you started off behind this year. I think he'll close fairly well.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like this may just be, you know, Kalen DeBoer and this staff's kind of MO is you let things settle a bit, you know, and then once the summer hits, you really start picking up names. Because they've got a lot of guys expected to take visits. You know, you can find the list. We've written about a lot of them on Bama Central. Just about every recruiting story that I write is tagged with the list of upcoming visitors as well. So make sure you go check them out. But, I think that's really all I've got for today's show. Unless you have anything else, you know, like I said, The biggest game, the biggest story of the week is obviously going to be this Duke matchup. We will see what happens on Saturday. It's going to be real tough, but I think Alabama can do it.
Oh, man. Yeah, it is going to. I mean,
if you get another game like BYU, you can do it.
You beat Carolina last year in the tournament. If you can, if you go back to back taking down Carolina one year and Duke the next, I'll lose my brain. But it's going to be challenging on Saturday.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very hard. But like I said, that's all we got today. I want to thank you all for listening to the All Things Bama podcast. Remind you to follow both Joe and myself on Twitter at JoeGaither6, at MAWoods_. Like and follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Amazon, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us 5 stars. We will be back next week, hopefully, to discuss a victory over the Duke Blue Devils and a Final Four and so on and so forth. But if not, we'll be back to talk about some other things. Thank you all for listening again. This has been the All Things Bama podcast.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.